This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Keller with speed to the Vancouver line. Drops left wing for Schmaltz into the slot shot right on. Rebound, they score! Clayton Keller. Keller near circle. Side of the goal for Cooley. Back to Keller. Right wing faceoff done. Doesn't have a shooting lane. Left wing Gunther fan on a one-timer, but it deflects in. They score!
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
In on the left wing, send it to Garland at the back door. The pass hopped over his stick, and here's a two-on-one for Utah to center. Cooley left wing, Sergachev with him, pass it to the slot. Sergachev scores! Mikhail Sergachev wins it for the Utah Hockey Club. On the backhand with 11 seconds left in overtime. And it's Utah 3 and Vancouver 2.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks lose 3-2 in overtime against the Utah Hockey Club, blowing a two-goal lead in the third period. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. We are going to welcome in Randeep Janda into the discussion in just a moment. And Bick, it's one of those things where the Canucks got away with a really bad first period. It looked pretty listless and didn't have a lot of energy, and Thatcher Demko saved them, made a number of saves on a couple breakaways, odd man rushes, gave them a chance to regain their form, and they did in the second, got the goal, had a two-goal lead, but they cough it up in the third, Bick. And, you know, the hallmarks of a good team is closing out games you have a lead, especially a multi-goal lead in the third, and it's not the first time this season this has occurred.
No, look, to be honest, like, they weren't good enough in the first period, right?
Yeah.
And throughout the game, like, Demko, as you mentioned, had to make a lot of high leverage saves just to keep it at zero for Utah. And like, the Canucks weren't impressive, but at the end of the day, you have a two-goal lead in the third period. And can you kill off the last 11 minutes of the game? And they don't here in this spot. I know we're going to get complaints about the officials on the Myers call. We'll chat about the officiating tonight. As we kind of just detailed in the second intermission, like, they were also fortunate as well. But at the end of the day, like, if you're going to be a good team, we always talk about, like, even when you don't have it, you still have to go get results. They didn't have it tonight. You had a 2-0 lead. Mm. You got to finish that one. And it's a big indictment on that group there.
Yeah, let's bring in Randeep into the conversation. And Randeep, it's one of those things, right? Like, they didn't play great, but you have a 2-0 lead. You have a guy like Demko in net, and, you know, you have the more talented roster, so to speak, compared to the Utah Hockey Club. You can't be coughing up those two goals. And I know there's that penalty on Myers was soft, but they could have got the puck out deep. They didn't. They end up taking on too much pressure in their own zone. And it's just the type of game where you just can't let this slip away.
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of focus on that penalty, but it really starts before that penalty, right? The 2-1 goal, Clayton Keller is allowed to generate speed in the neutral zone. He's able to dish the puck to Schmaltz, and then what happens after that, the shot goes through, and Keller's all by himself. He's got enough time to do a toe drag to pull the rebound to the center of the net to finish that off. That's too loose defensively in the neutral zone, even though they were, you know, playing pretty well up until that point, where in the second period they locked it down. They didn't really give much of anything in the second. Even in the third period, guys, they played a pretty low event game compared to the first period. And it's just that, you know, one play where you allow Utah back into it. They've got some belief. And sure, we can be, you know, mad at that call, the Tyler Myers cross-check to the back, whether that should be or should not be a penalty. But even after that power play goal that goes off of Teddy Bluger's glove, they're just absorbing pressure. They're a little scrambly in their own zone. It wasn't the best managed game in the third period from the team. And sometimes, hey, those calls go against you. You got to deal with it.
Yeah, and especially, as you mentioned, just not well managed. And in a game where they weren't skating, it was going to be interesting to watch, like, how they were going to do with a 2-0 lead. And, you know, we've seen them be willing to absorb pressure and, you know, play to their staples and all of that. But, like, they struggled to really get their motors running in this game. And when you play in that environment where you're just absorbing it all, you see the result of it.
For sure you do. And that's something that I think, you know, maybe halfway through this game, it looked like, okay, they're turning a corner here. But it's still a low event game. They weren't generating that much more. I think it was 15-12, the shot attempts in the second period. So, you know, you play, you get that goal on the power play, which was great. You get some confidence. I love the goal that Dakota Joshua scored, Quinn Hughes, and then Teddy Bluger with that nice pass. And on your night, when you're not feeling it, when your team is maybe saying, all right, we don't have those skating legs, maybe it's the altitude, maybe it's not, but the fact is you still have a 2-0 lead. That moment where you just kind of let off and you let the star player for the other team generate speed through the neutral zone, there's for the most part, the team did a good job in the second period, I would say, with the back pressure and coming back. But on that goal, that 2-1 goal, it wasn't there. So it's unfortunate because they look like they had this one wrapped up. The way that they were playing a confident game in the first half of the third period, after that Dakota Joshua goal, you know, you score that off the rush, you're saying, all right, now just do what you did in the second period. Lock it down, squash plays in the neutral zone, and you'll be okay. Unfortunately, they weren't able to do that on that Keller goal, and that really started everything.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we talked about this on the pregame show, too, about consistency, and they had the good game against Florida, then they followed up with a poor performance against Boston, then another good game against the Colorado Avalanche, and we were really curious about how they would come out, and the first period was a dud. And you mentioned altitude, whether that plays a part or not, but because, like we talked about the other night too against Boston, even though they've had the flu going around the team, we've seen enough of these poor starts and bad beginnings to games over the course of the season that we can't just say, oh, maybe it's the flu, maybe it's the altitude, because it's been a common theme. Like, well, what would you attribute to them looking like they were so off the pace? Like, even Quinn Hughes looked like he was sluggish in the first.
Yeah, it was pretty much every player other than Thatcher Demko that looked a little off speed in the first period. And I think you could attribute it to altitude, no doubt about that. You know, there is an effect there. That is a thing. But when you do have a history of starting games a little later, when you have a history of having comeback wins this year, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt that it's only altitude, right? And I'm curious to hear some of the comments coming out of the room. Will they attribute it to that? Did their legs feel a little heavy after the first 20? But the second period, they came out with jump, right? You saw Sherwood have a little bit more jump in his game. Dakota Joshua, I thought in the second period, was much faster. We saw on his goal, he was very, you know, straight line speed, north-south game. But that started in the second period where there was a play. He, you know, was aggressive on the forecheck. He lowered the shoulder and drove the net. So whatever it was, they seemed to shake it off in the second period. So I don't know what's that in terms of the altitude, but there was definitely a gear that they hit in the second period that they didn't have in the first period.
Let's go through that goal, because you mentioned the speed that the players have here. We're talking about the Keller goal. There's really nothing in it, because it's a 2-on-2, and Keller's kind of going to the wall already as he's about to do that loop around Myers. But it's essentially a 2-on-2. Even Bluger's back in time. It's a 2-on-3, if anything, and they just kind of cut right through Branstrom and Myers in that spot.
Yeah, it felt like there were two players that were just kind of standing still on the play. They're both watching the puck carrier, and they completely forget about Clayton Keller, who is, you know, one of the star players. Him and Dylan Gunther are the two best players right now on this team. And, you know, Tyler Myers goes right, and then he cuts back to the middle of the ice where Branstrom already is, and Dakota Joshua is coming back there as well. And there's three players to the middle of the ice where, unfortunately, you know, Clayton Keller gets behind them. So that to me is a classic of, you're watching the puck, you're watching Nick Schmaltz come through the middle of the ice, and you completely forget about Keller, who is able to not only pick up the puck, but he's got time there, guys. He pulls the toe drag, so nobody comes there and you know, if you're a little tighter, maybe you hit him once he picks up the puck. Maybe you're able to potentially knock him off the puck or tie up a stick. There's nobody near him, and that's where it feels like two players, most notably Tyler Myers and maybe the forward coming back, completely forget about Keller until it's way too late.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as far as you're right. I mean, I think that's on Myers, mostly on that Keller goal. Branstrom, yep. I know people want to point to him as well. And I mean, he's on the left side. He's playing the man straight up. That's,
I mean, even some Demko shouts, could he have handled that one a bit better?
Yeah, I mean, you know, somebody, Mitchell in Calgary, says some bad luck for the Canucks as well. I mean, 99 times out of 100, Demko, you know, swallows that puck up. The one time he doesn't, the soft call on Myers as well. And he's not overly concerned about it, but it's that play and the play in overtime. Honestly, like once you get to overtime, guys, like, I really don't care anymore, because it's 3-on-3.
It's
whatever, right?
I know there's a couple of texts about the pass JT Miller makes. I it's an ambitious play to make a game-winning pass. Like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't mind it, but it was also all-or-nothing sequence from JT because it was already late into his shift. He had a chance to change, and he wheels around Quinn, and he goes for the shot, and he makes the pass. I mean, he takes two risks. One is not getting off and then throws the pass, and both are high risk, right? And he doesn't have juice to get back, and it ends up being the game-winning goal. Again, I don't critique overtime. It's 3-on-3. It's, it's not conducive to any real playoff hockey or even regular regulation hockey. But to me, the issue is just giving up those two goals, right? And as much as we can talk about that call being soft, you need your PK to come up with one, right? And it's a bit of a bad bounce. The puck kind of flutters and goes in. It's just you got to help yourself a bit more and not be under pressure as much as the Canucks were in sequences in the third.
Yeah, and I thought the PK, the first two were really solid. They were actually, you know, aggressive at the blue line. They did an excellent job of not allowing Utah to set up. But in that third period, after that second goal, even before that second goal, you start to see them maybe absorbing a little bit of pressure and not necessarily giving up big chances, but just a little bit more zone time in their own zone. And that was a warning sign, right? The more you're in your own zone, guess what? Those battles in the corner, you have to watch out. Ian Cole gets called for the high stick on Brock Besser. I hate the whole even up call thing. You know, if it's a debatable call, if there's a veteran in your ear saying that he didn't like that call, I don't know what's going through the ref's mind. Are they looking for a call at that point? But with Tyler Myers, whether you like that call or not, I don't. But you still have to play through it. And the warning signs were there where they were eating pressure. And it's unfortunate because, guys, we're going to look back at that power play goal and say, you know, that's the one that really took away the two full points for Vancouver. But the two penalty kills prior to that were rock solid. They were really good. And they were, you know, a lot of hard work being put into them. A lot of aggressive play at the blue line by Sherwood, by Pettersson, by Connor Garland, who actually ended up drawing a penalty on Kesselring at the end of another PK. But, you know, it's all about timing. And in this game, you eat a little bit of pressure in the third period, it can bite you.
650. I'm just giving you a scope of what's happening in the inbox right now, Randy. I'm not going to read the text in particular, but like honestly, this is a night where a lot of people are kind of getting it and getting after it too in the inbox. Like I'm seeing Miller made mistakes, Pettersson made mistakes, a lot of complaints about even Connor Garland tonight coming in the inbox. Kind of a lot of overactive texts, basically saying that he's doing too much. I'm just curious, like. They play tomorrow against Vegas. Like, what are you trying to take out of this game to get ready for that one if you're these players?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that – and in regards to Connor Garland, I think he at times is trying to do a little bit more, but this is a guy whose second effort usually, you know, creates plays. It draws penalties. He's drawn 16 penalties this season, which leads the Canucks. So that second effort maybe – I don't mind that from him. I think he's the guy that really starts a lot of plays, and I would have liked to seen him be a little bit more selfish in that first period. There's a, you know, he's got a half breakaway, shoot the puck there. He waits for JT Miller. There's no play that develops, but in terms of changes for tomorrow, it's one of those things where who's going to help you get that start in the game, right? Like we're talking about a Vegas team that is one of the better teams in the Western Conference. They're the best team in the Pacific Division. You have to make sure that you start on time against these guys. And Kiefer Sherwood has brought that consistently. Is there somebody that you could, you know, is that a game that I could see a PDG start? Yeah, it's a back-to-back. You got a veteran player that you probably want to show some, you know, hunger. He hasn't played in the NHL this year. Is there an appetite to have him in there, a fresh body, and get things going, get things moving early on? So, you know, I think as far as the lines go, we'll see what they do on the power play. Power play two scored. Separating Miller from Pettersson on that power play and doing the little switch there is I want to see the best players on power play one. I don't know if having Miller or Pettersson on for a final 30 seconds of a power play is beneficial to anybody. So that's one change I'd like to see for tomorrow. And the other thing is I wouldn't mind some new energy, some new juice in the lineup, whether that's a PDG, I think we'll be hungry enough and maybe he provides some energy further down the lineup.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised after the game, especially when that first period effort simply wasn't good enough. Right. And if you talk about ice time here tonight, I mean, Dakota Joshua played 10-18, but he had a goal. He was good along the boards. So I don't think he's coming out. Nils Höglander played 10-16 tonight. He ended up being the low man for the Vancouver Canucks. So would it shock you if he gets in? I mean, we'll see ultimately what the coach decides to do here with the roster. But I know you mentioned on the power play, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson being separated on the first unit. And we've had some fun with it, joked around about it during the first intermission. We saw last game, Pettersson was on power play one. Now this game, JT was on power play one. It seems like the coach is alternating both guys. You know, we joked about it. It's like that scene from the Batman where the Joker breaks the pool cue and throws it on the ground and says, tryouts, you know, fight to the death to see who can take this job. But, you know, I know the coach doesn't care about narratives and he's not trying to troll the media, so to speak. But when you see that happen, I can understand why people are asking questions like, why can these guys not coexist on the same sheet of ice at the same time?
I think the logic with Elias Pettersson being on power play two for a short period of time is, hey, we want you to be more assertive. You're going to be the dominant puck carry. I want you to be assertive. You're going to be the guy that has to take the shots and be aggressive. But here's the thing. If you're trying to get him that assertive, it's got to be a very short experiment, right? It happened tonight. Sure, they were able to create a goal through Danton Heinen on that power play unit. But when you're one of the best players on the team, I want to see him with other players. So if this was an experiment to, hey, be more assertive, we're going to take you off power play one, we want you to be the dominant guy on that power play unit for a game, and then you come back to power play one and you find a way to jive with these guys again, fine. I just don't see the long-term value in it because, you know, Petey's a threat with that shot. He's a threat with that passing on the right-hand side. And even though it might be not jiving of late, we've seen when it does, that shot is one of the best in the league from that spot. So I think it's more of a, hey, get your confidence. We want you to be more assertive and bring it back to power play one. At least that's what I hope to see in tomorrow's game.
Yeah. Derek on Bowen texts in and says, can you please talk about our $11.6 million superstar in quotation marks being a complete shell of his former self? And why can he not play on power play one because of his feud with Miller? What is going on with that room? And he says, it's unprecedented for us. They didn't even share a second of ice time. They don't interact is what the text message says. Facts only. Facts
they did
only.
Share a second, yeah.
Actually, 28 seconds. Mm-hmm. So it was all 5-on-5, 28 seconds of JT Miller and Elias Pettersson. It was after a Canucks penalty kill where they reunited the lotto line for a shift. So they had one shift. Facts only. They had one shift together tonight, guys.
Yeah, we live in the reality of facts, folks.
We live in a fact world, that. Yes.
But, hey, listen, it's going to be, you know, I think on the power play, when we talk about all the separate weapons this team has, Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, and that, you know, that dual threat on the flanks, the power play is not the same when you don't have, you know, Elias Pettersson on it. So whether that's from a playmaking perspective or a shooting perspective. So the best version of the Vancouver Canucks on the power play includes Elias Pettersson and JT Miller on that power play. I hope this is a short-term experiment because it really does limit the effectiveness or the ceiling of the power play.
I do want to talk about something that was cool. Dakota Joshua's goal. That was pretty slick from him. And just nice to see him get a goal here, still working his way back. It's his second goal of the year, but just a nice connected play all the way through the defensive zone as well.
Totally it was. And, you know, with Dakota, it's been something of a challenge, obviously, coming back from what he's coming back from, you know, finding that consistency in his ice time. It hasn't been quite there the last couple of games. 8 minutes and 52 seconds the last game. You mentioned the ice time tonight, just over 10 minutes at. And first of all, it's great to see because in that second period, I think is when he really got going. There's that play down the right-hand side where he lowered that shoulder and drove the net. There's a couple aggressive forechecks where he's throwing the body. But then, you know, in that third period, just that beeline where he sees what's going on there, a good play by Quinn Hughes, a heck of a pass by Teddy Bluger, and he's got his eyes toward the net. And you're not going to maybe see that as consistently right now just based on the fact that he's still trying to ramp up. He's still trying to develop that consistency in his game, and conditioning is still a part of it, but he's got it there, right? Like, both of his goals this season have come off the rush, one from Connor Garland where he drove the middle of the ice and, you know, redirected it home, and this one was a high-end skill play where he, A, had to corral the puck and then pull off the deke on Vemelka. So he's got it there. It's just having the patience with him. And maybe he's got to play on the fourth line a few more games to build that confidence and that conditioning. But, you know, Dak has that confidence. He's got that skill. It's just a matter of when his body and his conditioning matches up with, you know, what he's trying to, the way he's trying to think the game.
Before we let you go, Randeep, I know he ends up taking the loss, but what did you make of the way Thatcher Demko played tonight?
Loved his game, guys. In the first period, it was, you know, what, three big saves, one on a Logan Cooley breakaway. You know, there was another one on Sergachev on a 2-on-1. Third period, there was another opportunity, Lawson Kraus in tight. And there's a few different opportunities. So I know folks will be looking back at that 2-1 goal by Keller and say, hey, could he done better there? Potentially, but I also think, you know, that's what your defensemen are there for as well. They're supposed to help you out, clear out that traffic. Even the best goaltenders make, you know, have some, you know, troublesome rebound control. You want him to swallow up the puck there. But I thought he was, you know, the player of the game for Vancouver, especially the way that this team had a lot of trouble skating in the first period. So another confidence-building game from Thatcher Demko. For the majority of this game, it looked like he was going to have a shutout yet again. Unfortunately, not only does he not get the shutout, he ends up getting a loss. But I think with this, you know, this short amount of time where he's had to play so many games, you got to walk away from both, you know, these games and say, all right, he's looking more and more confident. He's looking dynamic like the Thatcher Demko that we know.
Yeah, absolutely. He's looked lights out, and if it wasn't for him in the first period, this could have been ugly early on, but it was not, and the Canucks took the 2-0 lead, ultimately lose 3-2 in overtime in their first ever game in Utah against the Hockey Club, as they're known. Randy, great stuff as always, man. We'll chat with you tomorrow to set up Canucks and Vegas Golden Knights. You'll have the call with Batch, and you'll join us, as always, on the postgame show.
All right, boys, have a good one. Enjoy the night.
You got it. That is the game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $10,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And we'll take a phone call as well coming up in a second, 604-280-0650. And, Bick, I mean, there's a lot of reaction. And as always on the post-game shows, it's been all about Pedersen and JT. That's what we get the most reaction.
It's been impressive from the folks tonight. They put in a better effort than the team tonight so far in the inbox.
I mean, it's every second text. It's either about JT or it's about Elias Pedersen. And it's very clear what Canucks fans have on their mind tonight.
Yeah, it's a lot of Miller and Pedersen texts. And look, it's right, though. You're justified to say, like, what's going on? Why can't you two drive the play for this team? We've mentioned this before. There's really only been three games this season where both of them are going at the same time, and the game just looks far easier. It looks far simpler. We're at game 31. So for 10% of the season, the both of them have been on at the same time. And I know JT's had an absence, and Pedersen was slow to get going this season, but you know, I had a great chat yesterday with Yannick Hansen on the People Show, and you look at those two wins that they had against Florida and Colorado, which were their two best games of the season, and yet, you know, to Yannick's vantage point, that looks like a team that gets bounced in the second round.
Yeah.
Because your two best players or your two best forwards aren't consistently driving play. They played well enough against those two wins that they neutralized the opponents in Barkov and MacKinnon. But the step that has to happen for everyone is those two guys start dominating the game. And it's not as if they're not capable of doing it. They're more than capable of doing it. And we can talk about things like, oh, there's a bug going through the room and that can be tough. It's elevation. Sure, maybe, but at some point, you have to do the business. You have to prove why you're worth $11.6, why you're worth $8 million. It shouldn't be this jarring in the inbox right now, and the fans' faith should be rewarded a little bit. But right now, the fans' faith right now is shaken in those two players.
Yeah, not everybody, though. Ben the Chip Guy says, this baseless narrative that EP40 and Miller dislike each other so much they can't coexist needs to end. It's known that they're not close and have different personalities, but does not mean they can't play together as we've seen. They just happen to be both struggling. All the speculation is pointless, toxic, and can just be damaging once it reaches the wrong ears. Yes, they need to be better, but let's focus on the hockey, not behind closed door stuff. That's Ben the Chip Guy texting in.
And I agree with all that, right? Like, I do think it's a bit overstated, but as many people are texting in, your job is to go play the game. Go win the games. Mm-hmm. Have they been at their effective best so far this season? Like, even remove any of the talking points. If you just objectively viewed them.
Forget that. Forget that stuff. But how about both guys being good together? And how come you can't have both guys on the power play, right? Forget the interpersonal stuff. It's more about the hockey aspect of it.
Independently, have they been good this year? Like, to the
stretches.
level that you expect them to be. We could talk about these two guys being top 15, top 10 centers in the league. How often have you seen that this year? Not very often. And that's an element that greatly has to improve.
Now, Steve in Victoria says, Pettersson can float and make plays like Kucherov or battle and become a young Taves, but he's not playing like either right now. Steve from Victoria. And that's the thing. You see flashes, you have moments, but not putting it together. And ultimately, the ceiling of this team is going to be determined by their best players being their best players. It's as simple as that. Right. And I think this was a game where you saw elements of it not being at the level that it needs to be. All right. We'll get to more of your texts and your comments here in a second. Let's take a phone call here before we hit the break. And let's go to Revelstoke, where we have Darcy on the line. Darcy, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here after a 3-2 Canucks loss in overtime in Utah?
To be honest with you, I think the Utah crowd had the hockey gods in the building tonight with the owner giving away a whole bunch of tickets last minute. It was a home ice advantage win. Vancouver dominated the game and got up to a 2-0 lead, and the crowd took over. And I'm looking at the standings. Vancouver's a playoff team, and Utah is not a hockey team. So it's nothing to take away from the Utah organization, but I think that's what happened to them tonight. And the more that I know about the Canucks, like, I've been a longtime fan. I've been a fan since 1980. My first Canucks game, I was 4 or 5 years old. And they were playing the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart. But I've grown up in Calgary, so I cheer for all the Canadian teams. But as far as your Vancouver Canucks go, I thought they were going to beat the Oilers, but they had an injury in the goalie department. And I think with Rick Tocchet, I think they got the best coach representing the West. And I think, you know, Toronto's got a familiar coach there in the East. And I haven't had a chance to listen to a lot of the games, so please update me with the goalie situation in last year's playoffs. Maybe we could just end the night on a positive.
Yeah, thanks for the phone call, Darcy. So, I mean, last year, of course, Demko was hurt in the postseason. Artur Shilov's battled admirably, but obviously not quite up to the challenge, especially in games 6 and 7 against the Edmonton Oilers. And now you have Kevin Lankinen and you have Thatcher Demko, so far stronger in the net mining aspect of things. And I think that's not the issue. I think you feel very good about goaltending with this team, right? And they're on a real good spot. They're in a real good spot with their net minding. Mac texted in and said, you got to go Lankinen tomorrow. I would imagine Lankinen is starting tomorrow. There's no way Demko's playing back-to-back nights, I would imagine, especially with Lankinen being available. He had the flu, but I would expect he is going to play tomorrow. Let's take one more phone call before we hit the break. Let's go to Parksville, where we have Tom on the line. Tom, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, guys. I think there's a lot of people think the same way, but I mean, there is no way the Canucks are going to win a Stanley Cup with their so-called superstar. I know you guys are very lenient with him, very patient with him, and you support him. But I don't understand why. I can't imagine being in the dressing room, in the room, when you look at this guy who's making who's one of the highest paid players in the league. And
so what would you like to see happen then?
I'd like to see them get the best deal they can for him before his no trade contract comes into effect, because then it will be very difficult.
Yeah, I got you, Tom. Thanks for the phone call. So Tom thinks we're too lenient on Pettersson, wants Pettersson traded for the best package available.
And look, we traditionally have been. We're big supporters of the fact that at his peak, he can be, again, one of the dominant players in the league. But yeah, like I'm looking at this here. Now this is, again, he's still working his way back through whatever injury. I don't know if he's still 100%, but like, he's got 3 5-on-5 goals this year. And JT's got 1 5-on-5 goal this season.
Yeah, we get this, and it's fine. Listen, you guys can take shots. It's completely fine. You're allowed to, and you don't like the opinions. You're more than...
But those two guys got to be better set. Like, well, it comes
100%.
Danton Heinen has more 5-on-5 goals than those two guys combined.
But here's the thing, though, Bick. I don't think we've been sitting here this season, and we have people that listen to every single post-game show, that we sit here and say, oh, Pettersson's played well. We say we believe in the talent, and I would be very careful if I'm trading him, because if you're not getting something back that's high-end, you could regret that. But there's no doubt he has to be better. And even going back to last year, he wasn't good enough. Like there's no excuses being made. And not once have we made excuses for his play. We've defended certain aspects of his play, of course, right? And I believe in the player's talent. But he hasn't been good enough. And especially when you're making that amount of money, you do have to show up and be better. The trade stuff...
I'm not caving 31 games into a new contract. I totally get the frustrations. It's like, this to me is a workable problem.
To me, it comes down to, I'll trade anybody for the right price, so to speak. I'm just not sure that right now that price is out there. And if we're talking about stuff like Cousins and Byram, that stuff I'm not interested in. You know, so unless you can find in a trade a high-level center back in return, I'm just not that keen on it. It has to be somebody that can be a top-line center. And people say, well, they have JT. They can have a second-line center. What teams win without two elite forwards? So if the Canucks don't have Pettersson, you got to get another elite forward back in return to give yourself a chance. And I just think that's going to be tough to do unless there's like this incredible one-for-one for somebody that's at that level or higher. And I'm just not sure that's out there. But we'll see what happens. With this front office, like we said, anything could be possible. They've recently downplayed, when you talk to them, and this has been reported, any Pettersson chatter. Frank Saravalli was on with us too and said he hasn't even heard that Pettersson's name has been out there. And when you talk to people with the team, they say he's not being shopped. But at the end of the day, how this season goes could determine like what happens in the offseason. I'll defend a player's ability, but I don't think that you get a pass for an entire year. Like, you do have to show up. And I think when you look at what the Canucks need from the top two players, they need more from Pettersson. They need more from JT Miller right now. Those are their top two forwards on this team.
Just to highlight this point, too, as far as their 5-on-5 play, Teddy Bluger has more points per 60 than both of them. At 5-5-5.
I thought Teddy Bluger was the Canucks' best center tonight.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he made a great backhand pass to Dakota Joshua for that breakaway goal, and an incredible finish for Joshua, too, to give him the 2-0 lead. I thought he hustled defensively. I thought he was active. He was skating well. But you can't have Teddy Bluger be your best center.
And right now, like, both Piu Suter and Teddy Bluger, points per 60, outpacing Miller and Pettersson.
Yeah, got to be better.
In goals per 60, they're better than both of them.
Yeah.
At 5-on-5 right now.
Yeah. I think that speaks for itself, right? All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Canucks lose 3-2 in overtime in their first-ever game in Utah. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We'll get to more of your reaction, plus we're here from the head coach. That's next on Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hughes for Miller. In on the left wing, send it to Garland at the back door. The pass hopped over his stick, and here's a 2-on-1 for Utah to center. Cooley left wing, Sergachev with him, pass into the slot. Sergachev scores! Mikhail Sergachev wins it for the Utah Hockey Club on the backhand with 11 seconds left in overtime. And it's Utah 3 and Vancouver 2.
Both teams had chances in overtime. Vancouver, right before the Sergachev OT winner, back post, Connor Garland gets the pass from JT Miller, just can't connect. And that launches the counterattack the other way. A seesaw battle. It looked like Vancouver had this one wrapped up at 2-0. Utah comes back, gets that late power play goal. And in overtime, high drama yet again. But unfortunately, Vancouver couldn't find that goal, even though Garland had an opportunity. Miller hit the outside of the post. It's Utah coming back the other way, scoring off the rush to win this one.
Mikhail Sergachev, the big addition they made this offseason, scores a game-winning goal in overtime to beat the Canucks 3-2, who had a 2-0 lead in the third period, despite not having a good first period. But Thatcher Demko stood tall, gave the Canucks a chance, but ultimately lose in overtime. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. And as always, get your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards as well coming up in a few minutes, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. And we have the head coach ready. Let's get to that right now because let's hear what the coach has to say. It's not going to be the longest availability post-game, especially on the road with not a ton of traveling media. But does he get asked about the power play, the big decision to keep JT and Pettersson off the first unit and have only one of them alternating from last game to this game? So let's get to Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town.
Coach, how would you assess that game up 2-0 in the third, but came back?
Yeah, I didn't like our first. I thought we responded well in the second. Third, we had a 2-0 lead, and you know, you got to lock it down.
I know you don't like to comment on officials usually, but the call on Myers.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle's a good. He's a good ref. I he saw something different. You know, it happens.
How do you think your team turned it around in the second?
We started to skate, winning some more battles. I mean, they were ready to play, we weren't, and then we obviously grabbed a 2-0 lead. Mistake on the first goal, we back in, and then fluky power play goal gets him back in the game.
You said you like Dakota when he's moving his feet. Do you find he's getting his game trending back?
I thought today it was a step in the right direction for Dakota. I thought he really moved his feet, so hopefully he can build off that, yeah.
Made the change to power play one, Pettersson out, Miller in, just for a different look?
Yeah, we're just trying different things right now.
So what was your assessment of the power play? Dan gets the power play goal to get you guys off. Just your thoughts on the overall units tonight?
I thought we had some chances. I thought we had a shot the puck. Huggy had a couple of shots. Wasn't too bad. I mean, obviously, Heino getting that goal for us, it really helps us.
Is there anything you can take away from tonight to get you ready for Vegas tomorrow?
Well, I mean, just got to lock these games down. It's 2-0. You got to stay with it. So, yeah, I mean, every game's a learning lesson.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. Very short availability, just a minute and 20 from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. And like we talked about, he said, did not like our first period. And we've been talking about this, not a great first period. And reiterated a couple times, had a 2-0 lead, couldn't lock it down. And you have to learn how to lock these games down. You know, especially when you're 2-0, you got to be able to take that home. And I think that's the ultimate takeaway. And you can talk about a fluky goal on the power play, sure. And even mm-hmm. the Myers, when he says the ref saw something different on the Myers cross check, those things happen.
It's not as if Utah didn't have so many other chances with this game.
Exactly.
Right?
So it's like you can look at it that way too, especially the first. But nonetheless, you get to the third. And the first goal to me is the big issue. And he talks about this. We're backing in. You have Myers and you have Brännström on the same guy. And to me,
the Utah staff knew it. You could hear the reverse beacons. Eddie, can we hear this clip again as he's talking about backing in?
Stake on the first goal, we back in, and then
that was going on at the same
time. Power play goal gets him
reverse beacons going on there, right? They knew
they were reversing, and the thing is, you can't invite pressure that way, right? And you can't have both guys step up, and then you have Keller going in behind. Like, that's on Myers, and then Myers ends up taking the cross check, and yeah, it's a weak call, right? But he still puts the lumber and the guys back. You're out on the ice for a long shift. I know you're tired, but you've seen these calls be made. Don't give the officials a chance to make a bad call. And when you do that, you kind of do. And I agree, it's a bad call, and Tocchet doesn't like it either. But you had a 2-0 lead still, and you still have to control what you got to control, and you still have to be a lot cleaner in these moments. And they've given up these multi-goal leads a few times this season. The first two games of the year, this happened, right? It's not something that just happens every once in a while. It's happened a few times now for this team. And those are the things you have to improve. And a guy like Myers, and there's so many texts about him as well, about, you know, I can't believe they signed him to a three-year deal. Bill was saying it's Myers' fault on both goals, and that's why the Canucks ended up losing this game in overtime. You can't have a guy costing you like that. And we've defended Myers as well. I just think in games like this, you have Hronek out, you're a veteran on the squad, you just have to make better decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, again, you're shorthanded. You see, like, you know, the minutes are getting light now for guys. I'll just look up what Brännström played. 11:52 tonight for Brännström. So that means, like, you got to be sharp in your elevated ice time. It's 22 minutes tonight for Tyler Myers. So you can't be making mistakes and costing the team here in this spot. 650, while we're just chatting about the officiating, Tyler, using officiating as an excuse for Canucks is getting exhausting. It just seems that is always the reason people think they lose. How about the Canucks show up for the first periods, mm-hmm. pot a few early goals, hashtag raise the bar. That one's coming in from Tyler. And look, even if I agree that's a soft call, they were all kind of soft calls tonight in general. In both directions. Like, I didn't like the Brännström penalty. That, to me, is just a good play. By the end of the sequence, yeah, he gets his arm across, but he holds up the player. Didn't think the Kesselring one was a real penalty as well, because Garland kind of draws him into him with the hand into the head and brings it in. Like, it was kind of soft all night, but that's the point that you have to course correct during the game. You have to adjust to the change in officials. How is this game in particular being called? So it was consistent throughout the game, so it's a penalty at the end of it. Like, you're giving the officials an opportunity to do it, even the McBain tripping one, right? It's kind of soft. Big trees fall hard with Vinny DeHernay, but
yeah, I mean,
you're giving the officials a chance, and they're going to call it.
Well, yeah, and we talked about this during intermission. We can dislike the call on Myers. The Canucks, you know, the first two power plays they get, you know, some fortuitous calls, like the Garland one. It's crafty by him, but you know, Kesselring doesn't really do anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so. It kind of goes both ways sometimes, and I agree. We can talk about bad officiating. We can talk about soft calls, but I don't think this Canucks season has been marred by poor officiating. There are games we can talk about in moments, and I do think in the league across the league, they have to get better. Mm-hmm. I think officiating has been substandard this season, no doubt, but the Canucks don't find themselves with their issues. I mean, the Canucks, it's not the officials that cause the Canucks to have a bad first period.
Got to lock it down. Got to lock that down. Last year, 42-1-4 when leading after two. So far this season, I'll just bring it up here. I believe they're now 11-0-4. Yes, can confirm that. 11-0-4 now when leading after two. So they haven't outright lost when leading after two, but they've let it go to OT four times, and they've lost in that scenario. That's just not sharp. And also, that if I looked this up earlier today, I believe this is going to be Utah's first multi-goal comeback this season.
First multiple goal comeback.
Yeah.
All right. Another first against the Canucks.
Yeah.
We've seen those a few different times. All right. Is there anything else in the text inbox you want to hit before we hit the phone boards?
Oh, boy,
here,
is there ever.
There's a lot,
you know what?
Man.
Just go to the phone boards. Okay. I'll catch up in the inbox.
Yeah, there's a lot of Myers ones. Michael says, Myers was great last game. So there is some love being thrown Tyler Myers' way as well. All right. We'll get to more of your texts here as the show goes on. But let's hit the phone board. 604-280-0650 or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And let's start in Red Deer, where we have Jordy on the line. Jordy, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight after a 3-2 Canucks loss in overtime against Utah?
Hey, boys. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Rookie lap, here we go.
Love it.
Let's go.
I just want to know your guys' difference between last year's team and this year's team. You guys touched on it. Our home record last year, obviously, great. And holding the lead was kind of our thing last year. Our defensive structure was kind of what we live by. And what is the difference here? It can't be Ian Cole. Like, he's not the difference maker. So what do you guys think? That's it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Jordy, thanks for the phone call. I mean, Ian Cole, I do think, is probably a bigger loss than you're giving it a credit for. He was playing 20 minutes a game up until game 70. And I think what happened to him down the stretch last year, and then all the bad luck he had in the postseason, some bad penalties as well, and it seemed like every time he was on the ice, the puck would go in. Remember the game where the puck would bounce, he blocked the shot, and it bounced off him and went in somehow, and the shot hit him, he was standing to the side of the net, and the puck hit him and went in. Like, he had some bad luck as well, but I do think how he ended the season did kind of shade his overall campaign negatively in a lot of fans' views. And if you want to look at the big difference between last year and this year, the Canucks played a much cleaner game of hockey for the first 50-60 games. Now, towards the end, remember, after the trade deadline, they had a couple of injuries. They kind of went through a bit of a malaise, played some 500 hockey. There were questions about, how is this team playing? Do people forget that down the stretch heading into the playoffs, people were wondering, is this team losing it? Are they going to even win in the playoffs? A lot of people were texting in down the stretch saying, this team's going to lose in the first round. They're not going anywhere. They're going to get swept the way they're playing. They haven't showed up the same way they did in the first half of the year. But that first half of the year, Cole was good. Nikita Zadorov helped the blue line. They had a far better blue line and a healthier blue line than one they had this year. The only guy that got hurt a lot last year was Carson Soucy, missing half the year. But you don't have Filip Hronek for a big stretch now. So I do think the back end plays a big part into it. But I think the biggest one here, outside of the team game not being as clean, last year to begin the season, JT Miller was playing well. Elias Pettersson was playing well. Both those guys were top 10 in league scoring for the first half of the year. Top five. Remember, there was one stretch where Hughes, Pettersson, and Miller were top five in league scoring.
Besser was, I think, 11th.
Yeah, and Besser was like leading the league in goal scoring until Matthews took over and just crushed the rest of the season. You don't have those performances right now. The Canucks, the only league leader the Canucks have had this season so far is Quinn Hughes. Last year, they had goaltending from Demko because he was healthy, Vezina caliber. Now, Lankin has been fantastic too, right? But I think it comes down to, yeah, your personnel on the back end isn't as good enough, but JT and Pettersson just are not as good as they were to start last year. And it kind of comes back to those two players again.
Yeah, I'll simplify it a bit because that's a fantastic view of like the talent of it all. I'm just going to go to something as simple as like the staples that Rick Tocchet talks about.
Yeah, that fits too.
Like, let's go in the game-winning goal. I don't have a problem with the pass that JT Miller makes, right? You got to make ambitious plays to go try to win the game. So I have no issue with the pass. But he takes the puck out of the zone, sends it back to Quinn Hughes, and then chooses not to go off the ice.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you didn't have a play to make at about 40 seconds, 45 seconds into your shift, and you chose to wheel into the neutral zone to take a pass. So I don't have a problem with the pass to Garland for the game-winning goal. I have a problem with not changing.
And that's what it comes down to. And then you're making a risky play when you're tired as well. It compounds it, right? And that's the issue. It's not a smart decision. Again, it's 3-on-3 overtime. It doesn't mean anything in the big picture, but it's not a smart decision. It's an all-or-nothing play.
Yeah. And I think in general, like I think it's more noticeable at home games, but stuff like the line changes, like that's a staple that goes to Rick Tocchet's ethos of like the line changes have to be better. This is something we talked about prior to Rick Tocchet being here, and just the other, you know, staples that goes. Like, how many times have we used the word connected about this team this season?
Well, you just look
a couple of times.
Well, like we talked about too last year, they were one of the best teams in defending the rush. This year, they haven't been as good. And you look at the numbers from Clear Sights and Sports Logic; they're nowhere near the level they were last year, and they're not generating as much. And last year, they were, and we knew that their offense was not sustainable last year. They're converting on such a high number of their chances, but they were still an above average offensive team, I thought, right? But then Pettersson died off in the second half of the year in the playoffs. His offense wasn't there, and you saw them sputtering a little bit. And now the continuation into this season, it's not like their chance generation has changed dramatically. They're generating about the same they did last year. They're just not converting as much because their star players are not playing at nearly the level they need to be at. And the other part is, we knew coming into the season they needed to add a defenseman. Like, we knew at some point this season, at the very least, they had to add one top four D-man. They haven't. And they've had a run of injuries and poor form on the back end outside of Quinn Hughes. Carson Soucy's played better recently, but the first 20 games of the season, he was lost. So those individual performances just have not been where they need to be.
The things that you're in control of, though, are things that you should be able to execute at a very high standard. And things like their general attitude, line changes, like that's stuff that you're in control of. And we haven't seen like the good vibes that we saw last season. I think that plays a big role. So good shout there from Jordy and Red Deer.
All right. Before we take a couple of texts, let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Surrey, where we have Mike on the line. Mike in Surrey calling in. What's going on, buddy? What are your thoughts here tonight?
Thanks for taking the call. Great show, guys. Unfortunately, I'm going to disagree with you, Fat. The thing I like about analytics, I'm not saying they're the be-all, but even I, you know, like we get emotional, we get passionate, we see things. So I went back, I've been doing a deep dive. I was ready to rip on EP40 because I'm all with it. Now, putting aside the rip, I'm just talking pure numbers comparing last year, this year. The problem this year is not JT Miller and EP40. They are dominating when they're on the ice. That's their number one job. They're driving play. They're 13th and 15th in primary assists and then the top 30 in regular assists. The second job for a center is to create plays with assists. When you take a look at this team, though, the difference between last year and this year is they've actually dropped 15 places in chance generation. And if you look at this team after the, it's like two teams. You've got the teams with Hughes and Hronek, and then all, you know, Miller and Pettersson, and the top six, seven guys on the ice is like a dominant team, like we talked about. And then it falls off a cliff. You name it. Sushi, Dearden, Myers, Bluger, Brother. They're not even holding their own. They're down to 40%, and all the other guys are at 60%. And that is the problem. And I said this last year. It starts, number one, with an offensive defenseman that can help turn the play or close up the play when Hughes and Hronek aren't on the ice. That is the problem. Why are we talking about Miller and Pearson when they're 60% chance generation, 60% goal generation, top 10 primary assists, top 20 assists? What are you guys talking about? Look at the other half of the team. It's like, you just have to watch the game. when Miller and Hughes, Peterson and Hughes and Roenick aren't on the ice, the team is unwatchable. Thanks. What do you think?
Where are you getting the numbers for the 60% shot? Are you talking overall just scoring chances or high danger scoring chances?
Everything. No, overall scoring chances.
Overall scoring
chances.
These
are samples, okay? And I'm also looking
all
at...
All strengths, right? All strengths?
I'm looking... I do it 5-on-5 and a power play, right?
So all strengths. Really okay. So
no, 5-on-5. No, 5-5 first, separate.
Okay, then, not penalty kill.
Sure,
so
okay.
I'm doing it, doing 5-on-5. You, number one, what you do is you look first. What? It's 60% top, you know, what you would expect from two top centers. My gosh, you would dream to have 60%. And 40% for the other, all the other defensemen and most of the other forwards that are on the, you can't, when you're running 40%, when those guys aren't on the ice, and that's why we're not scoring as much and we're giving up more. So that's why we're not scoring as much. Last point, the reason why we're giving up more this year is not bad defense. Our goaltending last year was number one in the league save percentage, and this year it's 19th, 5-on-5. So there's the difference there.
But they've been worse off the rush. But they've been worse on the rush.
Yeah,
they're one of the worst teams defending on the rush.
Big picture. You guys are fine on the small. I'm just giving you the big picture where the problem of the team is. Okay? The team has got a whole... the weaker players on the team are too weak. You know, that is, and it starts with the defense. If you get they're four players away. They need an offensive defenseman. They need a third line center that can generate. And then they need a scoring winger and another defenseman. Those are the four to be a true contender. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the phone call. I mean, if you look at the amount of scoring guy like Kiefer Sherwood's done down the lineup, for instance, I mean, they've been getting contributions. But yeah, not quite sure I buy the overall argument.
650. This one coming in from Tatiana and Langley. Three straight games without a goal from our top six, two without a point from them. Depth scoring is awesome. Quinn Hughes can only be our star. Can't be our only star going right now. We need some help from the rest of the top guys. Hoping for a big bounce back tomorrow, but it's going to be a tough on a back-to-back. That one's from Tatiana and Langley. Emrit saying, can someone ask Tockett why taking Pedersen off power play one was a good idea? He gave an answer, just trying different things right now.
Yeah.
He didn't say tryouts. We're doing tryouts. He said just trying different things right now.
Yeah, we're just trying different things right now.
Beacon's going off through that whole presser to me kills me. It's so good. We talked about this a bit in the intermissions. I do wonder, because they're not really using Branstrom on the power play and there's not really a second D-man out there, if Quinn Hughes is going to play two full minutes on the power play, can you have Quinn out there with Garland, Suter, Heinen, and Joshua, or whoever like the next four guys would be? Is there enough of a threat to draw attention away from Quinn Hughes to allow him to create? So if it's Miller and Pedersen out there, or if it's Pedersen with Hughes today, Miller out there the other game, does it at least change the dynamics of it? And look, it works tonight. Heinen ends up getting a goal on the second unit power play, and does it open up space? But again, is that the cause you really want to worth fighting for here? Is it that valuable that Quinn Hughes needs to play the extra 15 seconds that he wouldn't otherwise play to break up your five best players on the power play?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see the value in it overall. I know that the Canucks power play looked its best with JT out. Like, they had the 30% stretch for the seven games.
It was their most productive stretch. Yes. I don't know if they looked the best, but it was at the end of the day, you're there to score goals.
Regardless, the power play still, to your point, hasn't looked overly dynamic. And I don't know if the answer is keeping these two guys apart. Like, I think that's correlation more than causation,
sure,
not having those two guys together. And I know Garland's really good at puck retrievals, and he brings in that element, which the team has lacked. But he just isn't a threat when he has the puck. Like, unless he's making a play or a pass, he's not a threat. Nobody respects a shot.
There's been multiple times this season where opposing teams have, vacated the space. As if it's like mosquitoes and off gets
they
sprayed.
They take his pass away.
They go to the four other guys, and it's Connor Garland from distance. And he's got to shoot.
So it's a distance shot that doesn't go anywhere, or he ends up just giving it back to Hughes. That's usually what he ends up doing, right? And I don't know if that's worth the puck retrieval aspect of things, right? And that's the way I would view it. All right, we'll get to more of your reaction on the text inbox and also on the phone boards coming up in a few moments, and we'll get to more audio from players post-game after a 3-2 loss in Utah. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar, and you are listening to the Canuck Central Post-Game Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canuck, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Keller near circle. Side of the goal for Cooley. Back to Keller, right wing faceoff duck. Doesn't have a shooting lane. Left wing Gunther fan on a one-timer, but it deflects in. They score. Teddy Bluger blocked this, but it flutters past Demko and into the net, and Utah ties the game with 4.5 minutes left in the third on the power play, and it'll be Dylan Gunther's goal.
And this is an off-speed one from Dylan Gunther. It looks like it goes off the right glove of Teddy Bluger. A pass from the right-hand side, and that's where one-timer for Gunther, so not much time to react for Teddy Bluger as he's shifting his weight from left to right. Gets in the shooting lane, goes off his glove, and no chance for Thatcher Demko as that puck goes right by him to tie this one up.
Back in on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to the phone boards coming up in a few moments as well. A lot of reaction on the text inbox. And, you know, you were mentioning this to me, like everybody is getting it on the text inbox. It's not just, you know, there's been a lot of focus on Pettersson and JT Miller, of course, and, you know, lots of talk about Tyler Myers, but there isn't a Canuck right now that's really escaping much criticism.
No, there's a lot of frustration. I've got texts here about Connor Garland. I've got texts here about Brock Besser.
Connor Garland, what do people want him to be? Taller?
What? Come on.
No, I'm just saying, like, what do you want him to do? Is it
save those
not,
jokes for Reach, all right?
I'm saying, what is it that he's not doing?
Like, love that guy.
I don't think it's his fault he's on the power play. He's doing the best he can. Like, he's making $5 million. He has 25 points on the season. I don't know what else you can expect from Carter
Garland. Can I read the text? I'll read the text since it's got you miffed here. Nick in the Ridge. I know this market loves Connor Garland, and he has some good moments for sure, but man, his game drives me nuts sometimes. He had a terrible OT in third. No finish. We need more of a lethal winger than that on this team. He drives play, carries the puck, plays on the PK. But again, I think for if you're texting that in to this crowd here, myself and Sat, I think you get some sympathetic ears in that moment. But again, he's playing well in general.
So to me, it's one of those things where, and it's a fair point. And you know, I've joked around too because a couple years ago, before last season, I did not like Garland's season. Like, he was overhandling the puck, just throwing it at net from all these weird angles. He wasn't forechecking as aggressively. He wasn't getting under the opposition's skin. And his game drove me nuts. I couldn't stand watching it because just spinning around, doing a bunch of busy stuff and not accomplishing anything. So at times, he can be busy. Like, for instance, there was a shift where he took a low percentage shot and then the puck comes out. And Desharnais has it. He steals the puck from Desharnais and then spins around and throws another long shot at it. And it's not even a good screen there. It's like, I get that. Those moments, I'm like, okay, you do a bit too much. But because he's been so effective, you take some of the good and the bad. And no player is going to be perfect every shift. And I think it's unfair to, you know, be overly critical of a player who's been so good over a few bad shifts, because every player has bad shifts. And every player who's aggressive is going to be over-aggressive at times and be selfish at times. And you'd rather have the aggressiveness than having a player be passive. So I think you live with some of the good and the bad. And I just think that Garland's done enough, Bick, and he's been impactful enough, and I thought for the first two periods was maybe the Canucks' best forward, that the overall criticism for me is just, I just can't be too hard on Garland. You know what I mean? Like, I think if there's a forward that this season deserves the benefit of doubt, even for a couple bad plays, would be Connor Garland. And I'm pretty surprised that I'm saying this, Bick, because if 2 years ago you would have asked me, would I be defending Connor Garland? I'd probably say no on the postgame show.
OP from Fleetwood. Love Garland, but he's not a top six piece. Not enough finish when it matters.
So I don't think that's I don't think that's necessarily wrong, because I think when this team is healthy, and they are healthy up front right now and going, I want Garland on his own line. I don't think Garland with Miller is the right combo long term, and I think with Pettersson it doesn't work either. I think the best fit for Garland on this team is having his own line on the third.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. Should I go more in the inbox? This one, unsigned. Mike from Surrey is back. We are so back. We're going to go on a winning streak with the goat emoji. So he's calling Mike the goat right there.
Is that what happened last year?
Yeah, that's what happened last year.
Right. Yeah, early in the season. Right, yeah. Right. Because that was that game in Edmonton where they played poorly but picked up the won the game.
Yes.
And then they lost against the Flyers. Yes. It was an ugly game. Right, right.
But this one, 650-650, Jim in Abbotsford. Stop blaming the refs. Team is not good enough. That one, Vilvang in South Vancouver. Tough to lose in that fashion when Pettersson could have ended it on the 2-on-1 with Besser. Brock charging hard to the net to collect the puck after Pettersson's shot and look for the pass, but Pettersson was already skating to the bench with his head pointed upwards in a typical display of his inability to hide his frustration and his lack of hustle. What are we going to do about this guy? 650-650. J-Mac from Tiletown, just wondering your thoughts on the power play scenario. Miller and Pettersson rotating off power play one. Could this be Tocchet punishing them both equally? If you guys can't figure this out, you're both going to suffer. And we chat a bit about the power play scenario.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad way of looking at it.
Just trying different looks.
Try different things and just be like, yeah, you know, figure it out. But I think when you say figure it out, you throw them both together and say figure it out, as opposed to not having them on the same line.
Yeah, I don't
same
mind.
Same power play unit.
I don't mind the tough love thing.
But is it tough love?
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, you're on the power play one game, you're on power play one the other game. So based on what we've seen, is Pettersson back on power play one against Vegas tomorrow then?
I mean, that's the trend.
Let's see if it
plus,
changes.
Plus, power play two scored today, so why not put him up there?
Elevate him?
Elevate
not
him.
Not that he had a part to play
and
in
rotate. Like, at some point, these guys need to get going. So, like maybe they just need something positive to happen here. And the power play usage right now is where it's at. And we chatted about the 5-on-5 production for them. It just, it's puzzling, man. Like, they're too good of players to have things be this disrupted.
Yeah, and, you know, as far as, you know, how Pettersson and Miller are playing and, you know, Mike saying they're playing fine, the production's not there. You can talk about underlying numbers all you want, and as far as, you know, the shot metrics and those things, I think the public data isn't as indicative as people want it to be either. And I do think overall there's been good moments from both guys, but at the end of the day, they're just not being productive enough. And if you look at down the lineup, Kiefer Sherwood, 17 points in 31 games, 11 goals. Pew Suter, 18 points, 11 goals so far in the campaign. Even Danton Heinen with his struggles has 5 goals and 13 points in 31 games. Teddy Bluger, 14 points in 31 games, right? Like, there is a bottom line there with those players. And if you want to talk about, you know, scoring chance differentials 5-on-5, because those players are more 5-on-5 players that don't play at special teams, I mean, they have positive scoring chance differentials. So, I mean, they are getting decent contributions down the lineup. I think their bottom six, like Tyler mentions, it's like, you know, the Canucks' bottom six has actually outproduced a lot of players, especially with their absences, goal-wise. Pettersson has 8 goals on the season. Sherwood, 11. Pew Suter, 11. You know, like, it just kind of is what it is. All right, let's take one more phone call here, and we'll take a couple. Let's start off in North Van, where we have Stu on the line. Stu, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Hey, evening, gentlemen. Hope you're both well. Yeah, I mean, you know, this again, I think if you look up in the dictionary about a classic Canucks blown lead, this is what you see. You know, when we were up 2-0 into the third, I thought, oh, this is going to be Demko's first shutout and he's looking better and better. And then it just collapses. And it, you know, a lot of the other callers and yourselves included have kind of gone into the breakdown in the overtime, how that kind of fell apart. And I mean, that guy who was very passionate, might I add, about the analytics when he called in, I mean, I think when it comes to analytics, and not just hockey, but a lot of sports, there is such a thing as dirty data. And there's a lot of stats you can kind of skew one way or another. One thing that I look at in terms of the numbers is how much are you making and how much are you doing? Because you just brought it up. I mean, 8 goals for Petey on pace for 20.5. Same with Besser. You know, Miller's mysterious absence, which we'll only know about in the biography of Aquilini. Who knows what's going on there? The emotional, you know, it's actually funny, that truck backing up, that was the emotional baggage truck that's going on in the locker room right now with the Canucks, because whatever's going on, we know Petey and we know Miller have something going on. And it's really frustrating as a fan of a team to be watching this kind of break down in front of you when you had so much expectations going into this year. It's a week before Christmas, boys, and I don't even have expectations anymore because, like a lot of people, I don't know what kind of team I'm going to see. We're in this, you know, shutout Florida, get blown up by Boston, win against Colorado tonight. It's like this back and forth. Like, at best, we're on pace to maybe make a wild card spot and get bounced in the first round by, like, Winnipeg, Minnesota, or Vegas. So I just really am concerned that we're creeping up on that halfway mark of the season now. And, you know, we talk about identity. We talk about staples when we're talking and everything. I just don't know where this goes. And I know, you know, people saying, oh, Connor Garland, this and that. Connor Garland's fine. If we're complaining about what he's not doing, it's like he's a little bit down the pecking order. Just order the Canucks stats by goals. You got to scroll down pretty far before you see Besser, Pettersson, and Miller. And, I mean, Danton Heinen is kind of creeping up on them. So that's what this comes down to. Like, we knew the defense was weak coming into the season after Cole and Zadorov were lost. Mm-hmm. And we've had the unfortunate luck with the injuries. Now Hronek's gone till, you know, early February. But it's just this constant thing. Like, in a sport like hockey, you need to have your, you know, three, four big guns going. And we've had, you know, between Lankinen and now Demko back, goaltending, it's fine. I have no qualms or problems there. Defense, we have the issues. If the offense isn't clicking, like, this team is going to be on pace for a razor-thin playoff position. And I just worry that, like, you look at a game like tonight. Again, it's kind of the guys' third, fourth-line players. It's been like that for pretty much all of December now. Like, I have trouble remembering goals from the big three. And I'll just make one more quick point here. And with that in mind, I feel like something has to change. And I don't know if it's personnel or just structure. But the problem is what you change, because we talk about this all the time. I hear it on 650, all these little fires. What do you address first to fix it? It's not just one guy. And so it sucks. There's problems on the ice, off the ice. But, yeah, you guys keep me sane through it all. So thank you, and have a good night.
Yeah, thanks for the phone call. I mean, something's going to give or not. We know the front office is active trying to make trades. We'll talk more about that on the other side, too, and talk about some of the latest out there on the Vancouver Canucks and what players are available to make trades. You know, as far as, you know, is anything major going to happen with one of their big pieces? I'll still be surprised if it's one of those things in season. But obviously with this front office, you can't put anything past anybody. But clearly they need help on the back end. That's the most obvious thing.
Yeah.
And I think once that happens, we'll get a better picture of truly what's going on with this team.
It was the obvious need to begin the season.
Yeah.
You know, I've stolen the phrase that you've started on the Desharnais acquisition. It was a heat check. And look, sometimes those heat check threes hit the front of the rim and they don't work out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so a hole wasn't filled. Added to it with the absence of Hronek, there is a glaring need all of a sudden. As much as you wanted to bide your time, get to the late January, mm-hmm. you might have to accelerate that process a bit just because of where you are. You might need more of a runway to ensure you're going to the playoffs. But yeah, like that really stands out. And, you know, what pieces are you going to be comfortable with trying to be aggressive? And, you know, we heard today Frank Cervelli this morning on Halford and Brough. You can go listen to that podcast. They're in the market for a top four D-man. So if you think what the Hronek cost was, you know, how comfortable are you living in that environment all over again? Are you comfortable being that aggressive right now?
Well, if it's somebody who's young, you can have long-term, sure. I have no issues with adding a legitimate top four defenseman and paying a hefty price for it if that player is in his 20s and will be, you know, under control for a long period of time. I have no issues with that. I mean, it's not cheap getting better, but getting better is what matters. And you can't be afraid of doing those things. It just comes down to the quality of player for me. And that's the big question. Like, what quality of player is available for you to be able to make that type of acquisition? And I think that's the big question, which we'll kind of get into a bit more. We'll take more of your phone calls, too. We'll get to Andrew in Vancouver, who's waiting, and we'll get to more on the text inbox as well. A lot of people texting and lots of saying, are you guys answering questions? We've been answering questions tonight, and we'll answer one from him as well as the Canucks Central postgame show rolls on. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Canucks lose 3-2 against the Utah Hockey Club. We'll break down the goals. We'll hear from Canuck players. No IMAC tonight, but we'll have a lot more to cover on the Canuck Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery, and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Quinn Hughes, and he clears it off the wall near side for Teddy Bluger. Nice pass to center. Here's Joshua in alone on Vemelka. He scores! What a move! Dakota Joshua deeks to the forehand and tucks the puck into the yawning cage. He's got his second of the year, and it's 2-0 Vancouver.
End-to-end action here as Vancouver, with a smooth breakout, starts with Quinn Hughes behind his own net, makes the pass towards the left wall, and a great play by Teddy Bluger at his own blue line with a little spinorama backhand sauce to the middle of the ice, and Dakota Joshua does the rest. Cuts to the middle of the ice and then goes back forehand to beat Vemelka on the deke. Excellent play from the entire Canucks line there, but a great finish by Dakota Joshua to make it 2-0.
Dakota Joshua, great hands, had a strong game tonight. The coach liked him as well. Really good along the boards, even on that goal, which we'll break down, does some good work in his own zone before ultimately showing some nice hands, putting the puck past Vemelka to give the Canucks a 2-0 lead, ultimately come up short, losing 3-2 in overtime against Utah. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. We are going to get to your text coming up in a moment, 650-650. We'll take a phone call as well, and we'll answer your questions. And we'll get to this, and we'll break down the goals coming up in a few moments as well. But Lotso's question was, 2 minutes left in the first, two shots on net, don't know what the problem is, but to this fan, that's a problem. Like, what are the answers to this question as far as, you know, what they did in the first? And I think a lot of it simply comes down to their forecheck. We had a great chat with Kevin Woodley today. And, you know, we, as far as all the talk about the public data, well, some of the data he has.
More proprietary.
He gave some insights into where the Canucks are as far as chance generation, according to them. But as far as the Canucks game, when the Canucks are forechecking well, and we saw it against Florida, we saw it against Colorado, when they're on top of teams and they're able to get some zone time, turn some pucks over, just put pressure on teams and disrupt their flow. You saw how hard it was for Florida to generate any speed through the neutral zone. Very few opportunities. Same thing for Colorado. Now, they obviously had their chances, but there wasn't this constant threat through the neutral zone. And when the Canucks are forechecking well, and when they're tight as a five-man unit playing the body, like the coach says, chip the body, so to speak, so anytime somebody's coming through neutral zone, be in somebody's space. When you're in somebody's space all the time, it doesn't matter if you're not the biggest or the most physical team, they still have to get through contact, and that makes it hard. It slows down the opposition, and the Canucks didn't do that in the first. So it's not even about, oh, why aren't they shooting it? You're not even impacting the game enough to get the puck, and the Canucks barely had the puck in the first period. It was mostly spent in their own zone, and they were poor through neutral zone. So it's not just about shooting the puck. It's about your overall team game. And this Canucks team, based on how they're taught to play under this coach, they have to forecheck aggressively. And when they do, they're really good. But that effort and that consistency in the forecheck hasn't been there. And I get it, Bick. You can't be 9 out of 10 all the time. But we've had too many games where it's like just non-existent. And that can't be the case.
You just did a nice soliloquy on a bunch of staples, basically, for Rick Tocchet, right? Like, forechecking. Right, he mentions like having a hunt mentality. How do you track guys? How do you chip the body? We mentioned earlier, like I don't think the line changes have been as crisp and sharp as we saw last season. That was something like day one of Rick Tocchet's tenure. Like that was something he mentioned, line changes, being connected. You know, connected as much as we talk about, you know, fancy tic-tac-toe plays, it's also being connected in how you forecheck, right? Are all three guys in sync to cause turnovers, to make it difficult decisions, to get your D gapping up and playing in control? Like all those things, like 31 games into the season, if you're looking for things that haven't surfaced, it's a lot of those problems. And so Lotso, like, we can talk about the shots and all these things. We just haven't seen like a consistent, coherent group right now.
Yeah.
And that to me is the biggest issue.
We've seen them do it. We haven't seen them do it consistently. And we saw it at times in this game, the second period, and even in the third. Somebody did ask, and I'm sorry if I don't recall which person individually asked, but why were they not forechecking as aggressively in the third? And this is something, you know, the coach wasn't asked about. And usually when asked about, hey, did you guys sit back, he'll say he wants the guys to be more aggressive. They did only have one forechecker oftentimes. Is that something the coach talked about? Is that something that the players themselves kind of did? I don't like when they get too passive with the lead. And I'm not saying that's the reason why they lost the game, but you know what the best way to win a game is to add to your lead. You score one more, you win. But they had a couple of chances in the third.
Per natural stat trick, they outshot the hockey club 16-13 at 5-on-5 in the third period. Outchanced them, high dangers, 3-1. Mm-hmm. But, look, the opportunities to come back, obviously, were fairly massive for Utah with Keller and right in front of the net.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at the actual numbers of it versus how you feel about the game. But I do think there were times
Demko had a great save on Carconi near the end.
Well, he made a number of big saves. Yeah.
Right?
The one we crashed into the post.
He kept it at 2-2. Yeah.
100%. I mean, it's one of those things where we're not good enough to lose the two-goal lead, right? But the first period, to answer the question, I think their forecheck and their overall play through the neutral zone is a huge part of their success when they are playing at the top of their game. All right, let's take a phone call here. Final one on the show. Let's go to Vancouver, where we have Andrew on the line. Andrew, thanks for hanging in there, buddy. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Good evening, boys. Just out on the patio here in downtown Vancouver. I was lucky enough to get to go to the last three home games before I head back to the East Coast. So two of them were a good time. Got to meet Crazy P. Life is good. I just wanted to say, I know our defense, we need a defenseman. Everybody knows this. But until we get that defenseman or moves are made or whatever happens, we have to maximize what we have. And I'm sorry, I love Connor Garland as much as the next guy, but there's no reason Pettersson or Miller, in fact, should be on the second unit power play. Miller, Pettersson, and Besser is not just an idea. We've seen them. We've seen them dominate. I remember early last year and previous years, these guys were killers on the power play. So I know that's kind of taken a step back. I know everybody's heard about the potential dissent between Miller and Pettersson. Listen, I'm not saying these guys have to send each other Christmas cards. They don't have to go out to dinner. But, I mean, if this team's going to be successful, we need to get our top guys going, and these guys need to find a way to work together and get that power play going. Not just the power play, but 5-on-5 as well. But if there is some sort of issue between the two, I would like to see it sorted out because, like I said, you know, we've seen these guys. The lotto line has been good. The power play has been good in the past. And I know it's not terrible right now, but, you know, there's another gear here for this power play. I know it. We've seen it. And now with DeBrusque as well, like I said, there's no reason that we shouldn't be able to get these guys going. Thanks, guys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call, Andrew. Get back home safe. Great thoughts on what he's seen from the home team.
The subtle triple flex there by Andrew. Hanging out on the patio, went to the last three home games, and got to meet Crazy P. Like, that's triple humble brag
That,
it's a hat trick of humble brags.
Listen, you can have a hat trick as a caller. It's not just about the players, right?
It's not just about Kiefer Sherwood.
Yeah, but he inspired. He inspired Andrew. But, you know, he's right, though. Like, there is enough talent on this power play for it to be good. We know the special teams can be deadly. It's just they haven't been able to click at it. Even last year, we saw for the first 20-25 games of the year, they were fantastic, and then it kind of fell off towards the end. But they've shown they can do it. It's just, can you get back to doing it?
650. Actually, should we hear from Joshua before we get to some of the trade stuff?
Sure. Let's get to Dakota Joshua. So here is Dakota Joshua with Dan Murphy after a 3-2 loss in Utah.
Dakota, how would you assess this one, a game that you guys had a two-goal lead in the third period?
Yeah, it's tough to let that one slip away. You know, it was a tough road game, but we had them right where we wanted them, and we let that extra point go.
It was a slow start by your team in the opening 20. What turned things around for you guys in the second period?
I think just moving our feet. Yeah, we came out a little flat-footed. They were on us early, and then, we started to get it going in the second, and then just fell apart there in the third.
You score the 2-0 goal, the second goal of your season. It started with a hit in your own zone. Mm-hmm. You think you surprised them by getting up ice that quick?
It was a 200-foot play, but it was nice to see that one go in, and got to do more of that.
Finally, quick turnaround. Vegas tomorrow, obviously a difficult test with the top team in the Pacific.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. We got to put this one behind us and be ready to go right from puck drop tomorrow.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's Dakota Joshua after the game talking about what went right and also what went wrong here tonight against the Utah Hockey Club. And before we get to the trade stuff, let's break down the four goals. And Dakota Joshua one happened second. But first, it was the Vancouver Canucks taking this lead, Bick, and it happened on the man advantage. And it was power play two with Elias Pettersson, who does not feature on the goal, but was on the ice when the Canucks took the lead.
Yeah, and it's great work here by Sherwood and Suter as well, because they help with retrievals all throughout the sequence of this play. Eventually, Quinn Hughes just takes a shot from the point, hits the backboards, and Heinen with some aerobic ability here to put his body in a position just to get a shot off and manages to get it up high on Vejmelka's blocker side and gets it in for the 1-0 lead.
Yeah, nice play by Danton Heinen to pick that puck up, who has now two goals in his last four games. And even
five on the year.
Even though he's had his struggles, there's been a bottom line as far as the points, too, and he had a real tough stretch but was able to kind of get out of it the last few games here.
He's got more five-on-five goals than the number two forwards combined.
And Mike in Surrey texts, and he's like, it's going to regress. And it's true. Like, shooting percentage stuff will regress. They'll score some more goals, but both players can be better. They can provide better, and I think that's a big takeaway here still. And the second goal the Canucks score, you heard Dakota Joshua, and he finishes the play off, but Bick, he starts it off in his own zone as well.
Yeah, this is a credit to him on this play. And Myers stymies Nick Schmaltz in the corner, and you see Bukestad come into the puck, and Joshua just puts a body on him. Just doesn't allow him to get there cleanly, so Myers pokes it away to Quinn Hughes up the wall. Bluger with a nice spin pass, and he spins it to Joshua, who as soon as that makes that chip on Bukestad and Myers pokes it away, you see him, he's out of the zone quick. And so he's got this full head of steam to pull away from the defender who's trying to track him. And then nice like fake going to the backhand completely dekes out Vejmelka, who bites hard on it, and then he just slides it into the empty net on the forehand.
Yeah, it was one of those finishes, nice hands around the net that he showed last season too. And his two goals this year, one was from Garland driving the net, able to tip it in, and this one dekes it and scores inside. This is kind of where he lived last year, inside the paint, and that's where he got to finish his opportunities. A great job for him to make it 2-0. And then not too long later, about 6 minutes later, the Utah Hockey Club finally broke through on Thatcher Demko. And, the coach talked about how they were backing up too much and not really skating with the players. And this was really on display when Clayton Keller banged in a rebound from a Nick Schmaltz shot.
Yeah, some speed through the neutral zone. Keller comes in, drops it for Schmaltz, and Keller loops around the two D-men there, Myers and Brännström, and goes around outside and then comes back towards the net. And Schmaltz gets a shot off, and Demko drops it in front of him, goes to go pick it up. And as he's doing it, Keller, very slickly, drags it out from the pads and pots it in. Very similar to DeBrusk's goal against Detroit, the way he peels it off those pads.
Yeah, and I thought his hands, you're right, were so nice, corralling that puck and then tucking it in. Nice finish to make it 2-1 at the time. And then some controversy. Now, we talked about it. A weak call on Myers on the cross check, but the Canucks didn't help themselves before that. They had a chance to get the puck a couple times. Once, Pettersson flipped it out, and Utah brought it back in from the neutral zone. The second time, Heinen had a chance to get the puck deep, doesn't. They circle it back into the Canucks zone. The forwards change, but Myers and Soucy remain out on the ice, and they get running around in their own zone. A little fatigue sets in, a soft cross check, but nonetheless, you put yourself in a position where you have to eat a lot of pressure, and the next thing you know, you're on the PK, and that is where the game gets tied, and some good fortune for the Utah Hockey Club.
Yeah, there's a cross-ice pass here to set it all up. It's not one that goes through the seam of the formation of the PKers. It kind of goes over the top, and Miller kind of maybe drops a bit too far down and allows Keller to get that pass through to Dylan Gunther, but, as you mentioned, the one-timer goes off Bluger's glove, flutters its way in towards the net, and you're in a situation, again, fluky goal, but you put yourself in that spot, and it's 2-2.
Yeah, and then we get to overtime, and, this is where JT Miller's taking some criticism, because the chance that leads to Sergachev's game-winning goal, the Canucks have possession. There is under a minute to go, and JT's been out for 30, 40 seconds. There's about 20 seconds to go in the period. And when he's in the neutral zone, instead of going off the ice, Bick, he decides to rim around, go around Quinn Hughes, get some speed, gets the puck, and that's where the chaos starts to happen.
Tries to make a nice pass there to Connor Garland, nearly comes off, but then it's a 2-on-1 the other way, the whole way, and it just you know, Sergachev with the backhand just kind of sneaks it past Demko on the other side, set up by Logan Cooley, and there's your game winner.
Yeah, and that's the end of the game, 3-2 in favor of the Utah Hockey Club. And the Canucks, yeah, gave up that two-goal lead in the third. Now, as far as the questions that people have had, and they've had a lot of questions about trades and players to go after, and we saw three trades today, right, involving defensemen?
Yeah, trade freeze coming up tomorrow.
Yeah, so that's coming up tomorrow at 9 p.m. Pacific time, midnight Eastern time tomorrow. So we'll see if anything happens.
Technically 8:59.
59, but, yeah, you're right, technically, so to speak. you know, I had heard today that nothing was imminent, and so far no trades happen today.
Sure.
We'll see what tomorrow holds as far as
the Canucks
Canucks and their trade discussions, but nothing's happened so far. The trades that did go down today, Kaapo Kakko traded from the New York Rangers to the Seattle Kraken in exchange for Will Borgen, a third round pick and a sixth round pick. I know Bick is going to shed a tear here in a second.
Tough one.
The second trade that happened, a small one, it's Pierre Oliver Joseph, the defenseman, going from the Blues to the Pittsburgh Penguins for future considerations. So not much. But then another trade gets done a bit later in the evening, Bick, and this is the one that kind of caught people by surprise.
Yeah, it's Alex Carrier from the Predators going to Montreal for Justin Barron. Swap of right-handed D-man. The Preds get younger and a little bit bigger, and Barron can, you know, he's thought to be of a decent prospect, former first rounder or high second rounder.
Yeah, first round pick. Yeah, yeah, I think 20th or 25th,
yeah,
or something.
And so they swap it. They get a cheaper player as well. Carrier, late 20s, just recently signed a 3-year deal though in Nashville. And I honestly really like the player in Alex Carrier, but he's not small. But he's again, if you're looking at it from a Canucks vantage point, and that they've gone after these D-men that are trees back there.
Yeah.
He doesn't quite fit the mold, but I do think he plays bigger than what he is listed at. Like he doesn't play small.
No, he plays harder. Now, I know for the Canucks, did he fit the profile of players that they would want to go after via trade? I think that's part of the question. But this is also now taking more players off the board.
Yeah.
So we already saw Timothy Liljegren get traded much earlier.
Yeah.
Olli Maatta, even, he was traded a bit earlier. And we also saw Cam Fowler get moved. So a lot of these defensemen kind of on the list. And Alexander Carrier and Will Borgen, Bick, on a lot of these trade lists that insiders have.
Barron would have been on my list as well.
Yeah, and Barron's on your list, but especially those other two. We're kind of in the top 15 of defensemen.
Fabro.
Or players. Fabro,
right,
too,
like,
was
like
picked
another
up.
One.
So a lot of guys have come off the board. So the question now is, who is available?
It feels like it's shrinking a little bit more, right? And it also depends, like, what market do you want to live in? Do you want to live in the top four market? Do you want to go in the right-handed market? And I think that's the one a lot of people probably want to live in, is the right-handed top four guys. Someone to slot in behind Philip Peronik. It moves Tyler Myers down. Do you then get a Forbert Myers pairing? Or do you go, you know, Forbert with the right-hander you acquire? Like, there's different things you can do here. I still think, like, we'll see what happens with Calgary, right? Is Rasmus Anderson the one that people want to go after? Like, for me, he would be on the list here. Mackenzie Weegar, now that one's a far longer commitment.
But are they even available? Calgary's in the mix.
Again, we're talking about, like, down the road here.
Sure,
if it's 3 weeks, if it's five weeks.
But I think that stuff's, like, down the road. If the Canucks are active now, like, those guys aren't coming to Vancouver.
It's true.
You know, and that's the thing, and that's why I wonder if the Canucks ultimately, if they make a deal, it's somebody that's kind of off the board a little bit that we didn't expect. We'll see what the Rangers do. They've been wheeling and dealing. They've moved Jacob Trouba. They've got Borgen now. What are they going to do on the back end? Are they willing to move off somebody? Are they going to sign a guy like Calandre Miller or not? I'd imagine they get something done with them. They signed Shesterkin already. But if he's available, that becomes, again, like, I'm not saying the Canucks
should. Should we plot out, like, a dream tier? Like, let's just craft our own list here of, like, guys we'd really like to go after, our dream tier.
Okay.
Because that dude's, like,
he's high on your list.
He's high on my list. Bowen Byron would be high on the list here. Rasmus Anderson would be high on the list here. And, like, these are the guys you're willing to jump the queue on and pay a high number for. Now, I know Byron's name got mentioned on Monday. Like, that's not the price I'm willing to pay. But if we were talking about, like, moving picks and high-level picks, like, these are the guys, the type of guys I'd like to shop for.
Can you get Byron without trading one of Lekker, Mackey, or Willander? I don't think you can.
No, probably not.
Right? So I think that's part of the issue. And even Calandre Miller, can you get him without moving one of those guys? Probably not.
Now, I would for one of those guys, I would entertain a Lekkomäki trade.
You would have to be able to sign those guys long term too, right? Both those guys.
Yeah,
so you have
Keandre,
to figure,
yeah.
And even Bowen Byram. Yeah. He's RFA at the end of the season as well. So both those guys would need contracts.
I'd probably I'd slot Keandre a little bit higher.
Just because you think he's better fit on the team?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he struggled a bit this year too. Like defensively now, how much is that the environment?
He struggled last year with Laviolette too.
Yeah.
I'm just curious if that's just not a fit. Yeah. But like that's the type of dude I would want to bet on.
Yeah.
Because we've talked about like the guy behind Quinn Hughes, the players behind Quinn Hughes have to be penalty killers, right? And like we're talking about, what, a 23, 24-year-old player
mm-hmm.
who can skate all over the place, can penalty kill. Like that to me is like a Hronek-type move.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't be afraid of doing those. It's just, are they truly available? And I think that the one with Byram is going to be interesting to watch. But even with Keandre, is that a guy the Rangers are actually going to move?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they going to sign him here long-term? And I think that's part of the equation, too, as far as what
they also have Ryan Lindgren. Right?
Yeah, he's going to be UFA at the end of the season. I mean, they'll have Borgen now, too, so it depends on where these teams are going to be at, whether they're going to be a buyer or a seller. The Rangers have enough talent that they should turn things around, but it's getting pretty dicey for them already. Like, for instance, like if you look at the standings after the game here tonight, especially in the Eastern Conference, because that's where a lot of these teams kind of look like they're more willing to wheel and deal a little bit. But Pittsburgh, Penguins, Flyers, Rangers, Islanders, and Red Wings are currently separated by 3 points. And even the Columbus Blue Jackets separated with them 4 points separation. They have 29 points. Pittsburgh has 33 points. And then Ottawa's a playoff team with 35. So it's like a 4 or 5 point gap between 8 teams in the Eastern Conference vying for your playoff spot. Who's selling mm-hmm. at this point, right? And how far away are you from it too? And same thing in the Western Conference. Like the Canucks with this win tonight, they're in a wild card spot as far as points are concerned. They're tied with the Edmonton Oilers. I guess the Oilers have the tiebreaker because they have more regulation and overtime wins over the Vancouver Canucks. But the Calgary Flames, they have 36 points right now. They're in the second wild card spot. They're not probably looking to sell, right? The Utah Hockey Club, they have a guy like Ian Cole. I know some Canucks fans, mm-hmm. But they're obviously in the mix still here, right? I think the Seattle Kraken with the trade they made wasn't so much about selling, more about opportunity to acquire Kaapo Kakko. Like, what team right now is willing to trade their top guy or one of their top guys? That's my question,
it's tough,
too.
Yeah.
You know?
A name that a couple of people have texted in about in the past, too, if we're just going off the beaten path and you're just creating your own guys that you'd like to see, not necessarily that are in reports, like, St. Louis just goes acquire Cam Fowler. A lot of people have texted in about someone like Justin Falk. Would that be an interesting guy? Because he's also a right-hander. Now, it's 2 extra years at $6.5 million. Is there like a retention scenario where you bring that number down just a little bit that's more palatable for you? Again, like that would be an interesting name too, because he that's a credible top four guy. Because there's other names that we get texted, and I know Buffalo's name comes up, and is it Joakim Harju or is it Connor Clifton? And it's like, yeah, like, look, real players, but I don't know if they're going to play more minutes than Tyler Myers.
Yeah, I don't think that's – and I think if you're taking on players that have contracts beyond this season, do you want to do it for guys that are down your lineup? Probably not.
No, but you want to do it for someone that's like definitely going to slot ahead of Tyler Myers.
That's what I'm saying. Like the Clifton thing, is it worth adding money to your books for the next 2 years? Probably not.
Sorry, you're right, because he signed until 2026.
Yeah,
you're
so
right.
So that's the thing. I don't want to add too much money on the books beyond this season, especially for guys that are down the lineup a little bit. All right, before we get out here, a couple texts we can end the show with. This one here, Mike by Duffins. Perhaps the mood in the room knows that next year is the best year to take a run, so it's a flip-flop effort to just make the playoffs. But maybe they're prioritizing or assessing what next year can be already. Maybe they see some problems solved by Lekkomäki, and they might have some better depth overall next season. That's Mike by Duffins. I don't think you can bank on Lekkomäki playing a huge part. I think young guys, you have to be careful with how much you project. Based on how the front office is calling around the league, I would say that they're not waiting for next year. That they're at least going to try to do what they can to improve the team this year and see if there's something they can do to take this team to the next level, right?
And also, players don't operate like that, of the idea of like, oh, the mood in the room, so we'll do it for next year. Again, they should be focused on this year, and putting all their efforts into this year. We haven't necessarily seen that effort transpire, but generally speaking, like, players don't necessarily approach it in that manner.
No, not necessarily. And I also think that as far as young guys, Lekromäki and Relander, they like both guys, but obvious, but I'm not sure you can bank on both guys playing a big part next year. You see young players, how, you know, how uneven it can be, and they can be contributors, they can help. I think you just have to be careful with how much you're expecting next year. So if you're trying to win, I don't think you can bank on those guys playing big parts. You hope that they can, but I think you have to plan for the fact that they may need some more time. And, you know, Mike says Hughes stepped right in, but yeah, but Hughes is a different level. Like, it's not common to do what Hughes and Pettersson did.
No, but like, but also, like, Quinn Hughes wasn't this version of Quinn Hughes.
No, and it took a while.
It took years to get to this version of Quinn Hughes.
Like, we've seen Lekromäki play. It's clear that there's still more he needs to do. Otherwise, he'd be playing here right now, right? And I think Villander's really solid. It's just, you know, they're different level of players, and they may need some more time before they get there. But all right, great stuff on the text inbox, as always. And thanks for everybody calling in and listening on the post-game show. It's always a pleasure, and we look forward to being back at it again tomorrow. What's happening on the People Show, Beck?
We got Steve Rabel coming on the show tomorrow. We'll obviously chat about this game, set up Vegas as well. So plenty going on the People Show, this one. Is this a promo for Guys, Name, and Dudes right now? Hashtag Jokes for 60. That's on Friday on the People Show.
Yeah, that's coming up on Friday. I'm on Canucks Central tomorrow with Dan Riccio starting at 4 p.m., and we're on here for the pregame show coming up at 6 and puck drop just after 7. Canucks wrap up a quick two-game road trip in Vegas against the Golden Knights. It's Satyar Shah and Bick Nazar, and special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. Thank you all for listening to the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.